If you want to watch online, we have several ways to do that. I have my own streaming service at runawayplanetpictures.com. If you go to donjohnsonmedia.com, it will have all the links. You're also, if you've got Amazon, you can watch it there. And it is, I mean, I know I actually don't make that many DVDs anymore just because most people stream it. It is, if you want the HD version, that's the place to go. So you can go. And if you want, frankly, if you want to, I'll just put this out there. If you want to support filmmakers like me the most, you buy it most directly. So Amazon, I mean, you can buy stuff on Amazon. I make about a penny, right? It's not, it's fine. It gets a word out there. But if you would like to actually pay for my product, go to Don Johnson Media and then buy the film or rent it from Runaway Planet Pictures. It's about, I don't know, $4 or something. It's not that much, or maybe $10 if you want to own it. But then I get a much larger percentage of that. It's just in general, like when people are creating stuff. I don't know. I tell my kids this all the time. Like, that it doesn't get created for free, right? Like, I know it sounds petty when it's the person creating it, but they don't seem to understand it. They're like, well, it's online. I had a guy take the DVD and post it on YouTube. And I'm like, yeah, but that, I mean, yeah, we want people to see it, but we also need to be able to produce the material. You got to be able to put stuff like this on, right? And there is a disconnect between, well, we want to do more stuff, but man, I'm not going to pay for it. Well, no, not really how it works. So thank you for selling out the DVDs, and please pick up some stuff at online. Happy to do that.
And one more. Not only literature.
I mean, I would never say that. Listen, money's tight. For some of the anti-scientific reasons we talked about, money's tight for a lot of people. So I get it. But anyway, just to throw that out there. All right. I have focused a lot on feminism, its role in the breakdown of the family, because I do believe that's the locus of Satan's work. He hates motherhood. He hates femininity. He hates the role it plays in God's economy. But it doesn't end with feminism. And the desire for radical autonomy and individualism, especially in regards to our sexual practices, opens the door to acceptance of a lot of other debauchery. I've talked quite a bit about homosexuality. I'm going to talk more about it. Transgenderism is probably the reason many of you are here today. We're going to talk about that. But also things like pedophilia and then transhumanism, which is coming down the line. Now, there are some who refuse to make that connection. Okay? And certainly many in each group on the stages down do not want that connection to be made. So, for example, you've got feminists like J.K. Rowling who are absolutely opposed to the whole transgender issue, right? They're called TERFs now, trans exclusionary radical feminists. And a friend of mine actually put up that billboard a couple years ago. Billboard Chrissy's called "I Love J.K. Rowling," and the guy that was up in BC, and the government took that down in about a few hours. I mean, that did not stand. Just that billboard was not allowed to stand. Why? Because it was seen as bigotry. But I give props. If you don't know, J.K. Rowling writes Harry Potter. She's rich enough to not care, I think, is what it is. She's made her money, and now she can just stand. But I mean, good on her, right? She has stood against it. However, as I'm going to explain, I actually don't think she has the ground to stand on, that it is her philosophies that opened the door to this. But even the gay movement, there's a very popular group, especially among conservative circles, frankly, called Gays Against Groomers. You see them on Fox quite a bit now. They are also against the transing, especially of kids. They're very nice people. I have stood shoulder to shoulder. There was a medical conference of pediatricians in Anaheim at the convention center last year, 10,000 doctors from around the country. And a few of us got together to hold placards and hand out information just quietly outside the convention center. And just to stop. We had "do no harm" on our t-shirts. It's like, be doctors, for Pete's sake. Stop mutilating children. Like, this is not hard. Right? The Hippocratic Oath, follow it. That's all we were trying to say. And interestingly, it was me, my wife, Daisy from the film was there, and the rest were mostly gay people, honestly. Very few Christians, I'm sad to say. Hard to get Christians out for that. Why are the gays there? Because they say, no, I don't want this either. And if you think about it, you're like, I can kind of see their point. And again, I I have no problem standing on the sidewalk outside the convention center with Gays Against Groomers. Just to put it out there, like they're doing good work. I don't want to. In what I'm gonna say following, I'm gonna undercut their philosophy. But practically speaking, I don't think we should be opposed to that kind of thing, right? At the same time, later that evening, we all went to watch Disconnected together, and I got a question about the gay movement, and I just very explicitly explained my position on it. So you can do both. I can do both. Anyway, it's basically old school feminists. Honestly, the old school feminists don't like what's happening. I saw just this morning Dylan Mulvaney has become another woman of the year for some magazine. If you don't know Dylan, I stand corrected. He, I'm going to talk about that more in a second too. He is the actor from LA, which is what he is, playing a role as a woman who is making a lot of money masquerading around as a girl. That's what he does. And now he's woman of the year in another. Well, they look at that, the old school feminists look at that and say, we didn't work all those years to have some dude who's just explicitly a con artist come and take all of our power and our money that we've been working so hard. So they're against it. And you can see why, because to be a woman and fight for women's rights, you have to have some sort of distinction between women and men, right? Like if men are the problem, well, we have to understand what a man is, right? And if women are the ideal, we have to understand what a woman is. Otherwise, we don't have a movement. So you can kind of get it. Same thing with the gay movement, right? I mean, what it means to be gay is guy likes a guy or girl likes a girl, well, we have to know what a guy is in order to like a guy. And we have to know what a girl is in order to like a girl. Like, you kind of get it. If suddenly that's all up for grabs, then what are we going to do, right? So you can see where they're at. However, as I'm going to explain, the philosophy is not different. They opened the door. The feminists opened the door for the homosexual community movement, which opened the door for the trans, which opened the door for transhumanism. Here's why. Oh, by the way, I don't think that's irony. I think they actually put that up. If I understand, do you get the problem there? This is where we're going to go. Reject modernity, embrace tradition. And they're saying homosexuality is the conservative aspect of things, right? And trans is the modern. If you can see how that encompasses everything I've said this weekend, you are with me, okay? Because that's of course absolute nonsense. Yet, right, the gay Republican caucus and all the gay conservatives that we have. No, okay, as I'm going to explain. No, we've gone too far. So let's connect it here. Let's connect feminism and homosexuality quickly. Feminism has always been in partnership with the practice of homosexuality. And lifestyle has always been a major part of the sexual revolution, especially in modern times. I mean, you look at all of the stories that I told you throughout the 19th and early 20th century. The gay movement was always part of it. I think Berlin in the 1920s was just a massive city of debauchery and homosexuality and pedophilia. Greenwich Village in New York, you read those stories. A lot of homosexuality combined with the feminist movement. San Francisco in the aftermath of the Flower Children, hippie movement. Always a lot of same-sex sexual practice going on. And remember, sex outside of marriage is not love. It's using each other. We have been so lied to about this with the homosexual movement, as if they want family, as if they want the same thing that Adam and Eve had in the garden. Absolutely not. The gay lifestyle has always been anti-nature by definition. It is anti-body by definition. It is destructive. It's full of regret and disease. It's the ultimate anti-nature practices. It's about flouting the rules. The kink shows, lately this has been getting more obvious. If you see all the pride parades this year, I mean the last few years, but the pride parades this year seem to be, if you notice, if you follow this at all, the pride parades, especially like LA, New York, San Francisco, but even in other places, a lot more what they call kink. So you have, even in some small towns, but you have naked guys whipping each other, and sometimes openly doing sexual things out in the street in front of everybody, in front of children, in front of families. That was this June. I didn't put pictures up because it's too disgusting, but if you want, I mean, it's just that mainstream media was covering it. There was some nasty, nasty pictures going on. I want to assure you that was always the point. That's always been the point. Kink is the point. In fact, the Washington Post posted an editorial this year, and the headline was, "I want to show kink to my kids," because that's the point. I mean, that was a paraphrase, but the headline was, "I want to show kink to my kids," meaning I want to take my kids to see the naked gay guys whipping each other on the street, because, she said, it shows that we don't have to follow authority, that we don't have to do what people tell us to do. It's always been about the revolution, right? The freedom that comes from doing what nature tells us not to do. That's been the whole point. So the whole like early 2000s with, oh, we want gay marriage, that was such a smokescreen. That was such nonsense, okay? It's always been about the kink. It's always been anti-nature. And because of which, I mentioned this last talk, but let me emphasize again, it's always harmful. There is no healthy homosexual relationships. They do not exist. Okay? There is no, sometimes you will see friends living together forever in a friendship existence. I know these gay couple. Okay, it's the outlier, and it's still not natural. It's still unhealthy. The gay lifestyle at its core is about guys being able to live out Freud's dictum of having as many orgasms as possible with the least amount of extra to it. There's a difference, by the way, between male homosexuality and female. And females actually do sometimes much more, have partners and live together for a long time. And actually, the Gays Against Groomers is founded by a woman, and most of the people driving it are women. Because women, like I talked about, what do women want? They want relationship. They want you to people to tell you nice things about it. Men want orgasm. Okay? So, when women have men abuse them and simply want orgasm and they get sick of it, they will move to relationships with women solely, and this was the feminist movement has always been very lesbian, because we can just be friends. And the sex thing is almost an extra for women. It's almost like, but it's not the main driver. Okay. It actually is the relationship. For men, it's just a way. It's like, I have all of these masturbation devices out there now. That's all it is. And so it's very anonymous, and it's very just, who can I get? Again, not to get too graphic, but like the gay scene, if you study it, often you don't ever see the guy's face. It's that disgusting, okay? And they make a point of that because it's not about the face, right? It's not about relationship. So the idea that two guys live together is almost never ever happens, okay? It's always about just fulfilling Freudian fantasies. Okay, now, feminism, homosexuality then have the same view of sex. That was a little bit of a discursion, in that it is not connected to the body, right? So feminism says sex is not related to my reproductive function. So being a woman is not related to my ability to have children. That's what it means for a feminist, right? To be a woman is to be able to go make money, I guess, but it can't be my reproductive function. That's why we need contraception. That's why, by the way, we need abortion. Abortion is just extra contraception. That's why abortion shows up in 72. It's just an extra way to keep us being able to have promiscuous sex and not have kids. It's not anything beyond that. So if your identity as a woman is not connected to your body, right, what does that say about you then? What does it mean to be a woman if it is not connected to your reproductive function? Matt Walsh just recently made a pretty famous film about this. Nobody could answer the question. Because if it is not related to your body, well, what is a woman? Is it someone who dresses up in fluffy clothes? Someone who wears makeup? Is it someone who likes pink things? I mean, what is it? What is it that makes a woman? interestingly, if it is any of those things, the clothes she wears, is it the thoughts you have? Like, what makes you a woman, right? If it is any of those things, what's to keep a man from just putting on that, wearing the makeup, wearing the clothes? I'm a woman now. Yeah. If woman is not connected to your body, which is the premise of feminism, then it opens the door for anybody to call themselves a woman. There is no more identity, right? It absolutely opens the door up for transgenderism. In order to follow it out, you have to take unnatural steps to stop the healthy natural processes of your body, right? You have to stop your body from doing what your body naturally does. So you take things like synthetic hormones. Well, that is exactly what the transgender movement is. It is about taking synthetic hormones to do unnatural things to your body. So it is exactly the same philosophy that feminism has been selling. It is about stereotypes. Feminism fought so hard against the stereotypes. Oh, girls don't have to play with dolls. Yet, by disconnecting feminism or femininity or what it means to be a woman from your body, you now reduced it to playing with dolls. So now the transgender movement shows up in schools and says, oh, are you a G.I. Joe or a Barbie doll? Or are you somewhere in between? Meaning, do you like to play with dolls or do you like to play with little toy soldiers? If you like to play with little toy soldiers, even if you're biologically female, we'll now call you a guy. If you like pink, my son liked pink when he was a kid. Does that make him a girl? Absolutely not, right? Absolutely not. Yet that's what they're telling. But it's based on feminist theory, right? That we disconnect you from your body. So the identity aspect of it is very similar to transgenderism and homosexuality. But here's what what about homosexuality? What does it mean to be gay? Think about what does it mean to be gay? Like, we just use that term. Oh, that guy's gay. What does that mean? Well, doesn't have anything to do with his body, does it? Because what's the difference between a gay guy and a not gay guy, a straight guy? They both have the same body. They both have what we would traditionally call male bodies, right? The biology is the same. Okay, so then what's the difference? Like, why do I call this guy gay and this guy not? His desires, his will, his actions. Oh, so it's desires and will and actions that now cause us to be called something? Like, that's the basis of my identity? That's why way back, by the way, at the beginning of two talks ago, we talked about the Enlightenment disconnection of identity, body and soul, dualistic, Cartesian dualism, where we emphasize the mind and the will instead of the body. We disconnect them. Well, this is how it plays out in the gay community. The difference between somebody being gay and not gay is their will and their desires and their actions. Okay, but what if I desire to not be a guy anymore? Like, what's the difference between a trans person saying, I feel like a girl today, and a gay person saying, I feel like I want to have sex with that person today? There really is no difference. Your identity is your will and your desires. It's this amorphous thing that's outside of your body. And if you place your identity in this amorphous thing that's outside of your body, well, what's to stop you from claiming to be anything, right? You can't place your identity in, I say you can't. And really, if you place your identity in this amorphous thing that's your will and your desires, then it opens the door to whatever, right? It absolutely opens the door to whatever. You want to be a cat today? Be a cat. Whatever, right? Because that's not your identity. But if you are a gay rights person, you can't stop the transgender movement then, because again, your philosophy is the same. Had an interesting issue. Speaking of gays against groomers, they have quite an online presence. They're on TV quite a bit. They've really exploded. But they got I'll call it a copycat movement come along, and it was MAPS against groomers. If you don't know what MAPS are, I'll tell you about it in a second. MAPS against groomers used very similar logo, used a very similar take on their approach. Yeah, we're against the transing of minors. We don't want the medicalization of our youth. And just like gays are against groomers, MAPS are against groomers. And the gays against groomers were appalled. No, we can't have. Why? Well, what is a MAP? A minor attracted person. A pedophile. Okay? Pedophiles against groomers. They're like, well, we are minor attracted people. If you are gay and you base your identity in your desires, like who I desire to have sex with, that's my identity. On what philosophical basis can you stop somebody from saying, yeah, that's exactly right. I base my identity on who I want to have sex with, and I want to have sex with kids. I am attracted to minors in the same way that you are attracted to your same sex. What's the difference? Philosophically, there is no difference. There's no real philosophical way to stop maps against groomers if you accept that you can be gay. The answer to it, of course, is nobody's gay. Nobody's trans. Nobody's a map. You have certain desires. Some of them are disordered. Some of them need to be counseled out. Some of them are destructive. And so you counsel people out of them. But you do not base your identity on them. This movement within conservatism, it's appalling to accept, to embrace gay. To embrace gay conservatism is absolutely destructive of the entire movement. So if you are a conservative today, absolutely put your foot down there. No, there's no such thing as a gay person. So there can be no such thing as a gay conservative. What you are doing, because the next thing will be a trans conservative, and then a pedophile conservative, and in 50 years, we'll have the Republican, transhuman caucus or something. Because that's where it goes. Your identity is not in your desires, okay? And it absolutely opens up then to pedophilia. And a pedophilia, again, has always been a part of this movement. Because if you base your identity and base all of human meaning on sexual function, I guess, like your sexual desires, then people who, first, kids have to have sexual desires. That's what Freud was all about. But also, the idea that maybe some people want to have sex with kids cannot be ruled out. So people like Simone de Beauvoir, who was the French existentialist, married was the lover. They don't get married. Jean-Paul Sartre, French atheist. They actually campaigned very hard, both of them, in France, to have child molesters released from prison and the age of consent laws in France abolished. Why? Because it's very consistent with their worldview, right? De Beauvoir was a bisexual who exploited her students. She actually had her teaching license revoked for seducing minors. Like, it's all very sordid, but realize it's all the same philosophy. And pedophilia, I mean, if you're old enough to remember the 70s and 80s, pedophilia was actually gaining quite a bit of cultural ground at the time. NAMBLA was a big thing, the National Association of Man-Boy Love, right? Quite popular. God, in his grace and as a bit of a slap in the face to certain Christians, I think actually stopped that movement for a time through the Catholic priest scandal, where the media had to make a decision. Who do we hate more? Do we hate the Catholics more, or do we hate child molesters more? And they decided that they hated the Catholic Church more, so they actually strung up the Catholic, good. I mean, they have good, right? They strung up the Catholic priests and that whole movement. But it did put a pause on the pedophilia movement that was gaining quite a bit of ground in the late 80s and 90s. That's coming back around, okay? I guarantee that's coming back around, that the age of consent laws, especially when it comes to, like, so in California, and it's very much wrapped up with things like the vaccine schedule, but also the psychologizing of all of our kids. So I talked about how in California, they are trying to, there's a guy named, his name is Wiener, believe it or not, Scott Wiener from San Francisco, gay activist. I would call him a pedophile activist, actually, who pushes, he puts forward so many bills in California every day, and they're all about taking parental rights away and lowering the age of consent for kids. That's every bill. And so in the school now, he wants, in fact, Newsom, I think he is running for president because he actually vetoed a bill that he normally would have accepted not that long ago in California about age of consent laws. So take that for what it's worth. We got a little bit of a reprieve in California. Probably means the country's not going to get a reprieve, is my guess. But all of these, if you take the age of consent laws down, 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 so that you can go in as a 13-year-old in California, you can't get a tattoo, but you can basically leave your house, you know, like leave your family and go live in a state-run home because you don't like the way your dad treated you, took away your phone or something. It's getting that bad. Certainly vaccines and all of that stuff are now, you don't need any parental permission at all. You just go and they'll send you off for an abortion, all of that stuff, right? Well, just follow that down. Like, where's that going? If kids have the power to do all that stuff, they have the power to consent to sex. Okay, that's where it's going. It's all ultimately going to be granting sexual rights to minors because the whole worldview pushes that. It has pushed that way for a couple hundred years. Okay, just be aware that's where it's going. That's why they don't care about these drag shows. They want the drag shows for kids in your library because they want the kids sexualized. That's the whole point. The whole point is the sexualization of children. Okay, and the feminist and gay movement has all opened the door up for the sexualization of children. Hollywood is absolutely a cesspool of child abuse, by the way. The stories on that, there's so much money that you try to make a documentary on that and you might end up suicided. But the stories of the sexual abuse in Hollywood, realize those are the people that are putting out all this nonsense pro-sexualization of kids propaganda. Okay, so the sexualization of children is usually where people draw the line, right? And that's where I got into it, certainly, as a father of kids, and I've never public schooled, but even in my little conservative circle, my kids didn't have a phone, but we were running into problems, you know, years ago, 10, 15 years ago already. As soon as the phones came out, the sexting started. And young girls were being pressured to send naked pictures of themselves to all their boys. And it's like 12-year-olds, okay? It's very young. It happens all the time. Well, it's pushed. That's like 10 years ago, okay? It's pushed way beyond that now. So, yes, the sexting is still, but the kids being forced into sexualization of just their whole life. I talked about Eugene, Oregon, high school in Eugene. I got into trouble last year because one of the teachers there, in one of his handouts, one of the assignments was basically each of the students had to pick another student that they would have sex with and what kind of act that they would want to do with that person. His defense, interestingly, I laugh about it, but interestingly, his defense was, listen, I didn't make that up. That's the curriculum. It's not like I'm a crazy teacher. That's the curriculum they gave me. And it was, okay? It was the curriculum. Okay, so here's some tips and I know you're here for the transgender thing, and I encourage you to watch. I don't want to speak too much that it's already in the movie, but I'll give you some tips on the transgender thing because it ties this all together. Where we are is just an unbelievable. So I'm going to package it as some tips on how to deal with the transgender issue in your kids. Because all of that goes together, like the young girls who are being sexted and objectified, sometimes they just want to stop being a girl. Actually, we'll get to that in a second. Here's what do I got? Four or five tips? Let's do this. First of all, transgenderism is not a biological reality. There is no such thing as a transgender person. Okay? So do not speak as if it is one. I'm a hardliner on this. Do not grant that you're talking to a trans person. Do not grant the pronouns. And I understand this is very hard. I get it. And people are going to lose their jobs because they don't put the right pronouns in emails. It's already happening. And you're going to have to bite the bullet. But you cannot grant that there is anything real about this. And I understand that we're trying to love people, but it is not loving to affirm someone in their satanic delusion. That's not loving. So what can you do with the pronouns? So like, legitimately, people are like, I'm going to get fired if I don't use the right pronouns. For teachers, this happens a lot, but even in professional settings. It sounds silly, but just don't use any pronouns at all. So just you call the person by their name every single time. It sounds weird, but you just like, hi, Dick. How is Dick doing today? Like, it's just like, yeah, okay, but that I'm not granting your pronouns. I'm sorry. So you can do that, but I do think, and the ex-trans people will tell you the same thing, by the way. Don't grant the pronouns, okay? So don't put them in your emails. The woman I talked to, she's like, yeah, I do that, but then in emails, that looks so ridiculous in emails that I'm actually getting run up by my superiors for not writing professional-sounding emails, right? So what am I, it's hard for me to say you're going to have to find another job, but some of us are going to have to find another job, I think, if we're going to stop. I'm going to Should I hold off? I'll go to questions we'll have time for that. Realize it's the ultimate anti-parent, anti-family, anti-person, satanic cult. Treat it as such. Also distinguish, I mentioned this in the film too, distinguish between actual body dysphoria, which some kids do have, okay, and what's commonly put out in the media as the trans issue, which is a bunch of sexually deviant middle-aged men with autogynephilia, which is just a sexual deviancy. They get off dressing as women. It has nothing to do with trans. It's just guys who like to dress as women. They like to look at themselves in the mirror as women, and they get sexual satisfaction from that. That's all it is. It has nothing to do with me actually thinking that I was born a woman or something, okay? So most of your middle-aged guys, that's what that is. You really do have to distinguish between that and what's happening to young girls. Because actual body dysphoria historically would have happened in young boys, maybe a few, like 0.01%, where they just are not comfortable in their body, and then they grow out of it, okay? Now it's all teenage girls. This is about 2005, with a bunch of social media threads basically started off, okay? For young teenage girls, this has never been an issue. It's never been a trans issue for young teenage girls. So why is it now? Well, I would offer four or five big reasons. One, they're preying on autistic kids, okay? Autistic kids have certain characteristics that make them susceptible to the trans cult. They're not necessarily very good in social settings. And so the trans cult comes along, you know, your GSA club at school comes along and says, oh, you're not comfortable because you're not actually a boy or a girl. Here, come, let us make you more comfortable over here. Sometimes it's just social pressure, right? It's like the new, you know, in the 90s, people went goth, you know, in the 80s, you dressed as something else. And now it's actually just very popular. Like you can be a nobody, change your pronouns on Instagram. Suddenly I've got 10,000 followers. Oh, well, that's handy. Okay, I guess I'm trans. Sometimes it's just as easy as that, right? Other times it's much more serious. The porn issue, the pornification of young kids. This is what I was addressing earlier. Some girls are just sick and tired of being sexually objectified. And they just don't, it's dangerous. Like I feel dangerous walking down the hall. I feel dangerous going to the bathroom. I feel dangerous all around because everybody is pressuring me to do some sexual act that I don't want to do or be some sexual being that I don't want to be. So what is the answer? Well, why don't I take that role? Why don't I switch out of being a girl and be in the power role, or at least not be a guy? I'll hide the thing that's being objectified. I'll hide my femaleness and be a guy because it's too painful to be a girl anymore. And this is a major, major one. Like I don't think you can overestimate how bad porn is and how much young girls are being affected by this. I talked about the medical problems, just even the medical problems. Again, it's not only that girls are expected to be sexually active, they're expected to be active in very violent, deviant ways, very unnatural ways. The new porn, which is now, of course, everywhere. It's not Playboy anymore. This is not your parents' porn. This is not the old stuff where you see naked pictures, you know, on some centerfold somewhere. This is violent, degrading. I mean, you can't even tell sometimes if you're not watching an actual rape on screen. You can't overestimate how bad, how violent the porn is that these kids are watching. And then they're being pulled into that. Young boys think, oh, I guess this is what life is about. And so they get a young girl and they're expected to do the most heinous, horrible things, damaging to their body. Well, who wants to do that? Nobody, right? So maybe I can opt out. And then there is, just as a direct result of trauma, a direct result of trauma, that people have been sexually abused a lot of times, and they want to get rid of the thing that they think caused them to be abused. So for young boys, for example, who have been abused, they just want to get rid of their sexual organs so that they can no longer be touched, no longer be abused. And so they will take the trans out on that. Like, just get rid. I do not want that anymore. For girls, same sort of thing. If the trauma and it doesn't even have to be sexual trauma, but the trauma aspect and the counselors. And again, we don't have too much time to get into how bad the counseling profession is. But traditionally, so all of those things, right? So we've got autism, peer pressure, porn, trauma, Oh, by the way, that's the same reason people are gay. Okay? In the old days, they were honest about this. And again, I don't want to, I've just researched a lot into like San Francisco gay subculture. And in the old days, you could go into a gay bar in San Francisco and ask the guy, so at what age were you first abused? And everybody would have an answer. Okay? Because that's what produced homosexual men, is abuse as a child. And if you didn't have abuse or a bad upbringing, you got it as soon as you entered the bar. The grooming of young men is a staple. I mean, that is what the homosexual lifestyle is about. Because a new daddy, almost often it's a new daddy figure. They have a daddy figure and a kid figure, so it replaces the faulty dad that you had. So there's a whole bunch of trauma in all of these issues. And what's crazy about this and what's so satanic about this is that in the past, what we would do with trauma, we try to heal it, right? You've got trauma. Let's think through how we can get you in line with reality. Because you come in with like bulimia or anorexia, say, right? It is a belief about yourself that's false. Girl comes in and says, I'm obese, I'm ugly, I'm fat, and she's 70 pounds, right? What she believes about herself is completely false. So what we need to do is get her to understand the truth and get her to accept the truth. It's called cognitive behavioral therapy. Cognitive therapy, right? Let me tell you the truth and you believe it. And as you believe the truth about yourself, you are a beautiful young lady who has so much to live for. And you need to eat some food because you are not ugly. You are not fat. In fact, you're unhealthily skinny, right? These are truth. What if we said to the kid, oh, well, you believe you're ugly? Well, beliefs are everything. So not only am I going to affirm you in your belief, that I'm going to give you stomach surgery so that you don't have to throw up all your food each time you eat it. You just won't be able to eat as much. We'll physically alter your body to match your false beliefs, right? But that's what we do to the trans kids, right? They come in completely traumatized, believing nonsense about themselves. And we say, oh, you believe you're a boy? Okay, let me cut your breasts off. Let me put you on cross-sex hormones. Let me take your sexual function for the rest of your life and eradicate it. Let me make you never able to have kids. Like, it's so insane, right? It's so satanic. So realize that that's like the anti-reality, this war against reality. That's what we're doing. It's like, you know, in the old days, for a while, we used to treat emotional women by cutting out parts of their brain. You remember this? Lobotomies. This was a scientific thing. One of the Kennedy kids had a lobotomy. Like, it was that accepted, okay? Oh, emotional women. Oh, well let's alter your body to change. And we obviously look at that and say, that's quack science. That's nonsense. What were we thinking? We're going to look back, hopefully, Lord willing, we'll look back on this day as even worse than that. Like, what were we thinking? Why are all these 14-year-old girls getting their breasts chopped off? What is going on here? Boy, we were nuts. Yeah, we were nuts, okay? We were crazy. So that's why I say do not grant anything on this. There's no like middle ground here. This is evil. Also realize this is not some sort of grassroots movement where thousands of young girls who have always been trans are suddenly realizing that it's socially acceptable now, so I can come out. You know, formerly they had to hide in a closet. Now we can come out. Absolutely not what's happening, okay? Never. This is a top-down movement pushed by rich ideologues so that now you can't enter a public school as a second grader without having rainbow flags down every hall and your teacher explaining her sex life on the weekend to you. This is absolutely, I've talked to public school teachers in California. That's exactly what happens to second graders. It's a cesspool out there, okay? But it's driven by, and why would that teacher teach that? Like, what's going on here? Well, on one hand, it's laws, but it's actually mostly money. Okay, who funds, for instance, all of the medical schools? Who funds all of our counseling industry? Who's driving all of this? Big pharma and a bunch of sexually deviant rich guys, honestly. It's guys like Pritzker in Chicago with political money. They produce and push out most of the trans nonsense in the country. It's people like I talk about him in the film, and now his name is totally escaped me, but the founder of SiriusXM, and anyway, another rich dude who just pushes tons and tons of money on this. And realize, by the way, these guys are making a ton of money on this. You think that the doctors, why is it that every time you go into a doctor's office, it's like, what can I give you? What kind of drug? What kind of shot can you take? I never go to the doctor anymore because I'm like, I don't want any of that crap. Well, why are they pushing it? You ask them. They're getting a cut on everyone. They make money based on how many drugs they can push. Well, who's driving that? The pharmaceutical companies. The pharmaceutical companies are making billions off of the whole thing. And the pharmaceutical companies own the media completely. Try watching network television. I don't, but try watching network television. Every single ad. By the way, America is a complete outlier on that. Go to any other country in the world, you're not going to see any pharmaceutical ads. People come to America and they're like, what is going on with your television? Why is it one drug ad? We don't advertise. Why don't you advertise ads? Because it's completely unethical. Okay? It's completely unethical for drug companies to try to sell you personally drugs. Just think about it. If you're on NBC News and your whole budget for the year is 95% Pfizer, and then you see, oh, Pfizer completely scammed us on their whole, they did a test on 3 mice and then sent their vaccine out to 1 billion people. Am I going to tell that story if the next day Pfizer pulls their funding and you're not going to tell that story. I'm sorry. The media is completely beholden to Big Pharma, okay? And Big Pharma, guess what, is driven by the desire to sell cross-sex hormones to a ton of people. Like the pill, by the way, another aspect of the pill that opened this up for them. They realized, I can sell drugs to healthy people. Wow, that's a moneymaker, right? In the past, if you're selling medicine, you have to wait until people are sick before you can sell it, right? And so you're like, okay, well, who's going to get sick next? All right, let's do a drug for that. Who's sick next? Oh, but think about the birth control pill. Now I can sell it to healthy people to make them sick, although they didn't tell us about the make them sick, but it did make a ton. It continues to make a lot of people sick, by the way. But to sell it to healthy people, not only to sell it to healthy people, but to sell them to give them a better life. Now we're talking about money, right? Now we've got a new dynamic for how drug companies can make money. I will sell it to people who don't even realize they need it because they don't need it. Well, if I can take that, and by the way, vaccines, the same thing, right? The pill, vaccines, what do I do with vaccines? I sell it pre-disease. I can sell it to healthy people. Oh, and I can get the government to pay me for it, and I don't even have to sell it directly to healthy people. What a deal, okay? Like, if I can get the government to buy 1 billion doses of my drug to sell to healthy people, I mean, who doesn't want that? But realize that's most of medicine today. It's preventative nonsense drugs that are doing immense harm, including the whole, like every bit of the transgender thing is fake nonsense drugs that are doing you harm, okay? So pharma's making billions and billions and billions. The surgeries are making billions and billions. They see it as a growth industry. If trans is a real thing, how could it be a growth industry? There's only a limited number of people that if it's inherited, right, if it's biological, there's only a limited number of people that should be trans. So how is it a growth industry? Because they're selling it. They're selling it to healthy. They know it's a trend. They know that they can do that. So realize this is not some sort of thing that we need to, you know, take a middle ground on, that we need to, I don't know. We love people by keeping them out of this mess. Also, don't believe the lies, like, for instance, about like affirmation care, or your kids will commit suicide if you don't allow them to trans. Okay, here's another lie. Okay, this is what you'll be told. Your kid has some sort of depression. Okay, as kids do. She's an angsty teenager. And you're concerned about it because you have to be concerned about it because everybody has to go to a counselor or a doctor now. So you go to the counselor and the counselor says, oh, well, she's angsty and I don't know, maybe she's trans. Well, maybe I am trans. Oh, well, we better go forward. Why? Well, if you don't go forward with it, she'll get super depressed and commit suicide. That's what they'll tell parents. Parents, a lot of parents are just pushed into a corner like, well, I don't want the kid dead. So the counselor will say, hey, do you want a live son or a dead daughter? Which one do you want? Okay? Complete lie. Here's the facts. You get more suicidal after trans. That's the facts. Okay? You realize, especially after the initial euphoria goes off, leaves you, and the initial, hooray from all your friends and all that stuff, eventually you realize, I mutilated my body. I have no sexual function. Jazz Jennings, one of the more famous kids who's being exploited on TV, I Am Jazz, very popular show, exploited by his parents, his parents, I guess I'll say. Jazz recently has come out as a complete, like, this was a disaster. And you don't see that, but just the interactions that he has, absolute disaster. Later on, they get more depressed and more suicidal. So don't buy that. And by the way, just as for your counselors, don't take your kids to counselors is one thing. Actually, my last point there, don't trust any counselors. I'll say that. There are good counselors, but you have to be very, very careful in what counselors you go see. Very, very careful. Because the counseling industry has been completely overrun by this nonsense. So the counselors lose their job. Sometimes the state mandates that you lose your job as a counselor if you do not practice what they call affirmation care. Okay? So what is affirmation care? Well, if it was applied to anorexia, it would be affirming the person in their beliefs as an anorexic. But they don't apply it to anorexia, but they do apply it to trans. So legally, in many states, if a girl comes in, says, I think I'm trans, you have to agree with her. You have to affirm her in her delusion. Okay? Or you lose your job. That's simple as that. It's against the law. It's against the law not to affirm. Well, let's understand that that is affirming you in your delusion, that it is nonsensical. And by the way, there's another little trick the pharmaceutical companies and the industry uses they want to call it a pathology, right? Because you want to be able to go to counseling and get money for it. So you want to be able to charge your insurance. So if you go to a doctor and get diagnosed with trans, you can charge insurance. Everybody's rolling in the money. Everybody's good. But let's think about this for a second. Is it a pathology or isn't it? Right? If your natural state of being is trans and that's your real state of identity, why are we calling it a pathology? Shouldn't we be treating it? If it's a pathology, we should try to talk you out of it. Shouldn't we? If it's anorexia and it's a pathology, I should try to talk you out of it. But I don't talk you out of it. So it's not actually a pathology. But they call it a pathology so that they can get the money. You see what I'm saying? They want to have it both ways. So you want to treat it as a pathology so I can get the money, but I can't call it a pathology because then I would have to treat you. So in fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the money, calling it a pathology, but then I'll actually entrench you in your delusion. So the whole thing is just a nonsensical house of cards that must be opposed at every possible level. So don't trust any education, counseling, or medical institutions. Public schools. I mean, the simple thing for me to say is don't go. Okay? Don't go. I understand sometimes there's better ones, but honestly, if at all possible, you got to take your kids out of public school. If at all possible. I teach, just real briefly, I teach in California. We have a classical academy. But the way that Adelphia Classical Academy is set up is one that I recommend. If you can find something like this, I think it's amazing. We meet 3 days a week, and we're registered with the state of California as what's called a PSP. So we're actually a homeschool program. So that they have no control over our curriculum. We don't take any money, so we got to charge our kids. There is that. But the state has no control over our curriculum. But our school is absolutely, I tell them, they're in the top 0.1% of education in California. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. These kids know they're getting such a good education 3 days a week. I mean, we give them work for the other two. That they're coming out, I'm so proud of the kids that come out of there. But comparing them, I don't want to sound like the public school kids. I read a story this morning, again, about freshman professors. I always talk with freshman professors in college, like, what's the state of your class these days? And, like, they can barely read on it sometimes. It's just like, we got to realize the education system is a mess. Okay, I got one final little And I don't think I even have a slide for this. Do I? Oh, yeah, I do. Okay. One final little tidbit for what we can do to reverse the revolution. Historically, trying to counteract the sexual revolution, it's not like people haven't been trying to counteract it. They have, okay? Unfortunately, often the counteracting force has been just as bad or worse, okay? So, for example, during the post-Civil War times, where I talked about the spiritualist uprising, all the feminist movement, all of that thing, the temperance movement, were all of that, and the abolitionist movement, were all, frankly, joined together. So the abolitionist movement and the feminist movement, in many ways, were tightly tied. Not always, but many times, okay? Because they were actually, like, the abolitionists, the crazy feminist abolitionists, were looking for freedom for the slaves, but I will say for the wrong reasons, right? For a libertarian freedom. But at least they were looking for freedom for the slaves, which, by the way, is a good thing, right? We want the slaves to be freed, okay? However, in the reaction against that, so people saw all these libertarian, pro-free lovers fighting for freedom of slavery, and they said, well, we want nothing to do with all that. We want nothing to do with your leftist crazy coalition over there. We want to preserve tradition. We want to preserve reality. And so we want to preserve natural family. We want to preserve man and wife. And we want to preserve the institution of slavery, unfortunately, right? And so this actually moved well into the 20th century, where the Ku Klux Klan, it had an initial rising post-Civil War and then kind of fell off for a little bit. But as the sexual revolution heated up and immigration heated up in the early 20th century, the Klan became a major cultural force in America, especially the Midwest and, frankly, out through this area, Oregon, Washington, Idaho. The Klan became a major player. Illinois was absolutely run by the Klan. Indiana was absolutely run by the Klan. In fact, there was talk that the next president might be a Klan. You got to understand just how popular the Klan was in the 1920s. 40,000 pastors were part of the Klan. The first movie that was shown in the White House was Birth of a Nation, which was a hagiography, like a pro Ku Klux Klan movie that showed, by the way, a poor young white damsel in distress running from getting sexually ravaged by the beastly black man, right? The Klan was the pro-family, pro-conservative movement in the early 20th century. They were the tradition movement. They would have what we've been called the religious right. They were explicitly Protestant. They had the cross. I should have put up a couple of pictures. There's pictures of, like, Jesus saves and the cross and then all the Klansmen. The political power and the cultural force of the Klan was great because, though, realize they were pro-family. That's what they sold themselves as. That we are the ones that are fighting against the sexual revolution. Very anti-homosexual. Very anti-divorce. They fought for sodomy laws. They fought for anti-adultery laws. The Klan was doing all that. They were seen as the riders, the white riders. But of course, they're crazy racist nutcases. Okay? Evil, crazy racist nutcases who were lynching blacks by the dozens and hundreds around the country. So we need to be careful to not tie our pro-family message two crazy nutcase racists, for one. But, you know, there's others, right? You see what I'm saying? Like the Klan, and this was a major, this is no small thing, because you think, well, why did the sexual revolution take off post-World War II? Well, one of the reasons was that it was explicitly tied to fascism, that the sexual revolution was seen as an anti-fascist movement. Wilhelm Reich explicitly sold, in fact, his book, The Mass Psychology of Fascism, was the most requested book in the New York library system in the 1940s. Absolutely most popular book in the library. The Mass Psychology of Fascism. You think, what the heck? After World War II and the Holocaust, you got to realize people were very, very concerned about authoritarianism. and how crazy people could be. And there, at high levels, people were thinking, like, how can we control the masses? Like, how can we keep this from happening? They saw the Nazis rise up, and it scared people. Like, how, we don't want that. Reich tied Nazism to family. Okay? He tied, it was the nuclear family that was the problem. Like, fascism was a pro-family thing. And actually, if you look back, Hitler was very, his slogan, I'm not good with German, but Hitler's slogan was Kinder, Kutsch, Kirch, or something like that. Translated to English, Children, Kitchen, Church. Children, Kitchen, Church. What's that about? He was very strong on saying to women, you shouldn't be out there flouting yourselves like prostitutes. Homosexuals shouldn't be doing that stuff. Women should be home raising kids. Women should be we should be pro-family. The Nazis sold themselves as the pro-family movement in Germany against the crazy sexual liberalization of the 1920s. And it was crazy in the 1920s in Germany, the gay movement. Like, they rounded up homosexuals like they rounded up Jews. But here's the thing. They rounded up Jews. Okay? They were crazy eugenic racists. We cannot push, we need to be careful not to connect our pro-family movement with anything else that gets sucked into it. Okay? And that crazy eugenicist, racist, sort of anti-immigrant, anti-whatever, does tend to get tied up in a pro-family message, unfortunately, historically. A lot of that has to do with the religion of America and all the rest of it. Like Hitler did grab a bunch of his ideas from people like Sanger. Sanger was very happy with what Hitler was doing over there, right? So there's a mix. It's a mix. But to realize that, just to be careful, right? Be very careful about how we're mixing our, messages. You can say, so I told Gays Against Groomers, listen, I'll stand shoulder to shoulder with you against the medicalization of kids, but I will not support your philosophy. We have to do that on any level, right? We don't get into bed politically with racists and Nazis or gays or any of that stuff, right? Pro-family has to be just pro-family based on the theology that we talked about last night. Okay, then a couple of last things. You'll notice that the anti-fascist movement, which today carries on in Antifa, that's what it is, right? And he says, isn't it interesting? Well, why is Antifa so pro-sexual liberation and so, like, supporting Hamas? And it just also seems so weird, right? Like, what's going on there? But realize that they are a satanic movement that is only interested in tearing down anything that they can do to tear down. It's not a positive movement. Satan's not interested in building anything. The utopian experiments were a mirage. There is no utopian experiments. The Satanist tear down movement, the revolutionary movement, is only to burn it down. It's never to build it up. Okay? Antifa likes to burn things down, just like the fascists, like the anti-fascists of the middle 20th century. They were actually fighting fascists. Like, they do have a tradition of fighting fascists. But they saw it as fighting family and any sort of oppression. The revolutionary spirit took them that far, right? But they don't have anything to replace it. We need to have a positive message that steps in and says, we don't just tear down. Do I want to get rid of our government in California? I absolutely do. They're terrible. Just so terrible. But I need to not just be a tear-down person, right? I need to have a positive message to tell people. My kids, listen, a lot of people leave Christianity. There's a lot of deconstruction happening in evangelical circles right now from 80s kids who came out of the purity movement of the 80s, the 90s, where they were wearing purity rings and they were listening to Christian music and everything was going to be good and we're not going to date until we marry and all that stuff. And a ton of those, are now left the church because it was only an anti-movement. It was, don't go have sex, don't do this, don't be like that, don't listen to that music, don't do that. There really was no positive message in there, unfortunately. But we have a positive message. That's why last night I started with a very positive message. What is the vision? What is the vision of her family? And it is so positive, but we have to include that in our message. We can't just be seen as anti all the time. And then finally, you got to live the incarnation, right? Like, we have to be building families. We have to be concentrating on being good husbands and fathers and grandparents and brothers and sisters, and family has to be first, because that's how God builds his kingdom. And so anything that comes in front of family, I know I was talking, Dick and I were talking yesterday about the role of sports in our culture. Like, you know what? Sports gets in the way of family quite a bit. Sometimes it's seen as a pro-family thing. It's not a pro-family thing. At least not, I'm not, hey, I love sport. I grew up playing sports. Don't get me wrong. I watch sports. But sports is an idol a lot in our country. It's an anti-family idol that sucks a lot of money and makes a lot of problems. So we have to live at anything that comes in front of loving your neighbor, loving God, producing families has to be abandoned. We have to be God first. We started talking about the fall of man. Adam and Eve messed up. The family God created for them made our bodies a tool. But that was not the end of the story, right? God sent his son to save us. And what did he do? He became a man. He took on a body, right? To redeem our bodies. The bodies are so important in our story. The incarnation of Christ is the answer to the mess that we are in. God offers us not a salvation from the flesh, but a salvation of the flesh. And I think as we live out that salvation in our flesh, that for the most of us, at least, will involve getting married, having kids, raising them in the faith, that we will become the aroma of Christ to those around us and a true light to the nations. I think that's our only hope for reversing the revolution. Thanks, you guys, for coming out. I appreciate it.